that's saxophonist or saxophonist, whichever you prefer, Jackie McLean and his quintet with Hypnosis. It's the title track from his 1967 album, and appropriate indeed today, considering what happened last night. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and you know where we're going. We're talking about charades, what the Republican debate actually proved about politics and the media. You will recall yesterday we predicted that the heavily marketed Republican Q&A, I refuse to call it a debate, co-hosted by CNN and Facebook, would focus on terrorism and related issues, to wit, immigration, homeland security, ISIS, and, of course, the racist canard of good Muslims and bad Muslims. And so that's what happened. And we began to discuss why. So I'll expand a bit on yesterday's theme today, the why of it all, and the media's role in helping to create and to propagate an alternate reality and political narrative. These things are scientifically done. By that I mean there's a method to the madness. These things are not accidental. There's a great purpose. We talked about the money factor, and it's a huge, huge element in what we are experiencing, and that is being translated to us as a political season, an extraordinarily contentious political season. And we're supposed to think of it that way. You know, it's all politics. No, it's not. It's not all politics at all. Because politics is just one aspect, one sliver of the big pie, the big apartheid pie of America. And so we witnessed some very interesting things last night that remained remarkably consistent. Here is CNN, a supposedly liberal bastion of journalism, and what do we see? An overwhelmingly white production. Very, very white. And indeed, a kind of interesting blending of whiteness, because many of the people who are now authorities who have been granted membership into the circles of whiteness, as we define them here in a political sense of white supremacy, they're now entrenched. I'm talking about people like Chris Cuomo, Wolf Blitzer, and so forth. They're very much a part of the norm now, the circle of whiteness. It was a very white production, and especially as it pertained to analysis and specialized knowledge of what was going on. Now, that's not accidental. That is consistent. The message always has been that special knowledge, expertise in anything, and particularly in politics, and particularly in politics at this particular time, we are not going to have that specialized knowledge coming from people of color. It's just not going to happen. So the absence of melanin in the whole discussion last night, both in terms of the audience, in terms of the participants, in terms of the so-called journalistic world, this is white America having a conversation with itself about the interests that concern it. This is not about the people. Well, they'll throw those phrases in to make it look good. It has nothing to do with what you're thinking and what you're feeling and what your issues are. This is a reflection of the fears of white America coming to terms, white America coming to terms with its own fears. And it is really not a major thing as to where the divide is, whether it is ideological or sociological or in any other way. The thing is where the common line is, where the commonalities are. And a commonality is white America is very afraid. And how do we know that? We know that because the polls are saying so. Remember, we talked about polls yesterday and how polls are being used at this particular time for all kinds of reasons, including producing and validating an alternative narrative. So you'll see all kinds of polls. The Wall Street Journal just yesterday, as a matter of fact, Wall Street and I believe it was NBC, did a joint poll. What does it say? It says that America, and you know what that means, white America, America is concerned about terrorism, and therefore it explains why terrorism justifiably takes center stage in our political consciousness. Well, again, I have no knowledge of any African American or Latino or Asian person who's ever been polled, because those ideas and those feelings are just don't matter. We don't, you know, it's what the general in charge people think, and the in charge people think that terrorism is the number one issue in America now. A funny thing would happen if you were to poll other communities, and you would find terrorism is not number one, in fact. You would find that unemployment, police brutality, and police killings, you would find the shuttering of schools all over the country and depressed communities and communities of color, you'd find these things taking precedence over terrorism. So it depends on which America you're talking about. And the America that we saw last night is the America that we always see. And it is presented as America. And suddenly the issue is immigration. Nobody's talking about, well, where did Trump's grandfather come from? Where did Mr. Cruz come from? Where did anybody up there come from? Where did everybody up there come from? You check their lines, and I'm willing to bet my last penny none of them were First Nations people. And yet immigration is an issue. And when we say immigration, we're talking again about that kind of immigration that threatens the racial purity of the group in charge in America. That is what is the fear. So the narrative to support that has to be in place. So you get a poll by a news agency, in fact, by two news agencies. You have NBC and you have the Wall Street Journal, and it's so it goes. The New York Times has a poll, you know, the Daily News has a poll, everybody's polling. Everybody and the grandpappy is polling these days, because that is not only the additional source of revenue for these news organizations, it is also the way they shape public opinion. They shape public opinion because the polls, engineered to elicit a particular result, of course, targeted at a particular population, of course, will yield a predictable response. And then when it does yield that response, it becomes news. The poll becomes news itself. Today, for example, every poll would have justified today's news headlines. And the news headlines, again, will be that the Republican so-called debate, the Q&A, the dog and pony show that they put on last night, The main concern, guess what, was exactly what I said it was going to be. Who knew? Who knew that was going to happen? Who knew I was this gifted that I could see things? No, this is not about being gifted. This is just about paying attention. If you pay attention, you see the patterns. And after a while, you could predict exactly what they will do. Because this is the science of control. These things are not accidental. They invest heavily in the science of fighting for and capturing your mind, diverting your attention, persuading you that your reality is in fact an unreality, if it exists at all. The reality of people you know, which is that terrorism is not the number one thing in their minds. The number one thing is that this country is out of whack. We are living in a country that refuses to abide by the concept, let alone the practice, of democracy. We are living in a country ruled by the rich. Congress is organized crime. They do what they want, when they want, how they want, with our money. It is government, not by the people for the people, but government despite the people. Government to spite the people. Government against the people. Isolated from, insulated against the people. That's what we've got. So here, if we just do a little more deconstruction, just to let you understand how these things are organized. And when I talk about systems, this is what we need. We need to understand. These are systems of control, mind control, and everybody's in it. So it is not accidental that the cameras just didn't pan the crowd. It might have been a bit of an embarrassment to show who was actually there, who was actually invited to this thing, who were the dominant people of the audience. Where did they come from? What did they look like? Did they look like America? No. They looked like white America. And CNN mirrored the audience that it was going to entertain as hosts. The panel is an all-white panel. You can't have Latinos and Asians and African Americans and First Nations people asking questions about democracy. You just can't have it. We don't qualify, just like that Supreme Court case, the University of Texas. We just don't function at such high levels to ask questions. So the liberal CNN performs surgery on its own. In fact, they might have adopted some of Dr. Carson's surgical techniques. They surgically excised all people of color from the production. But it was a highly produced one. CNN showing absolute, they did a bunch of things to convey to these people who they know have money, Trump, and then later the Democrats with Hillary coming along, there is a lot of money on the line here. So they show, look, we got you a great venue. Look at all the bells and whistles we put in. We've got all kinds of stuff, very impressive. And we put on quite a good show. And if you pay attention to the questions asked by the newsman, the crown prince of CNN, Wolf Blitzer, he is right in there with them. the questions all pretty much come down to defining the issue from the outset as we're going to talk about how we're going to deal with ISIS. We're not discussing U.S. foreign policy. It just never showed up. We're not discussing the relationship and the history of U.S. foreign policy in creating disasters and terrorism. We're not discussing even domestic terrorism. That is terrorism committed by good old Americans. We're not discussing that. Everybody knows what we're talking about. And yet, they will insist that was just not the focus. We're talking terrorism. We're not talking Muslims. Only about the bad ones. You know, and Wolf Blitzer is very comfortable asking questions that suggest that he and CNN are okay with, you know, war against Muslims. Let's go bomb some. Let's go bomb them to smithereens. Let's have ourselves a good war. That essentially was the tone of the night. When are we going to do it? How are we going to do it? But we should do it because white America is terrified of the terrorists. Now, on a journalistic level, let's tackle that premise. We have not yet, at least I am not yet convinced, that anybody has proven that the attacks in San Bernardino, California, were in fact the work of terrorists. You see, it may very well be the case, but so far, I'll tell you what I'm sensing. I'm sensing a foregone conclusion arrived at. I'm sensing a great deal of media choreography in lockstep with the government, and that never is a good formula for trust, to parrot everything the government says to report. They've reported it without independent corroboration whatsoever. Are these two people, the killers, are they terrorists? And who gets to define that? And how did they define that? And how is it that the media suddenly can't independently either refute it or corroborate it, but in any event, just not swallow wholesale what is given them to report? But they seem to all be in lockstep with that, so I'm naturally suspicious. But I do see how it is convenient to feed the public this narrative, because there's a great deal at stake here. It's a political season. People could make points. Or I am more anti-Arab and more anti-Muslim than you. They're even fighting over who coined the phrase radical Islamic terrorism, which is different from any other kind. And we're not discussing Islam, you know. We're not attacking Islam. Let's be clear, they say. We're just attacking the bad Muslims who've invented this narrative to justify the wanton slaughter of innocents. And we are America, after all. This is the nationalistic fervor that the media are now enlisted in just promoting. Suddenly, we are all one, despite the history that we know we have of incredible fractures in our society based on race and class and gender and all the other things that they found to fracture some kind of organized opposition. We're supposed to now just set that aside. It doesn't exist anymore. There's a new narrative. And Wolf Blitzer is the chairman last night. Suddenly, it is immaterial whether these are Republicans or Democrats arguing the issue. The most important thing is let's get it clear. Let's get it said. And my penetrating questions will lead us to the answers. And the answers are all the same. They differ only in degree as to their racism and as to their warmongering. Only in degree. They all agree, let's go to war. Let's send somebody else's children to go fight and die. But let us not, for goodness sake, although this is the essence of what would restore democracy to America, Donald Trump, who wants to make America, bring America back, he could single-handedly do that, you see? How do you bring America back? To what? To what exactly? That's another narrative that has to be created. The narrative that America was great. America was great, and we need to be great again. Now, what that means, when translated, it means the power to destroy, the power to rule and dominate the world. But you see, it's never reported as that. It is contrived, a kind of innocent thing. We should all want America to be great again. Great at what? And this is the connection with what they call terrorism. The acts of terrorism, for the most part, are geared toward U.S. conduct in other people's countries, what they choose to do. We had a very holy man, a very self-righteous man, Mr. Carson, Dr. Carson, Seventh-day Adventist, and talks about how central to his life God is. What did he say last night? He said, look, anything that looks, we should really go to war. We really need to obliterate these people, these Muslims. And trust me, I'm talking only about the bad ones, okay? The good ones are good, but it's the bad ones. And in pursuit of the bad ones, we may have to kill a bunch of good Muslims. But these are the tough decisions that a president has to make. Leaders have to make these tough decisions. You know, when I do neurosurgery on a little child, and I tell the child, you know, I have to open up your head. This is what he's saying last night. I have to open up your head and go inside your head and cut out a tumor. Well, the obvious thing is there's a risk of death. But I know what I'm doing, so chances are, you know, you'll pull through kind of thing. Same thing here. In pursuit of the bad Muslims, you know, the terrorists, some good Muslims may have to die. And then he said, there are some Muslims who should automatically die. We should, once we see a vehicle that looks anything like a military vehicle, he says, poof, you know, it should be gone. This is the language we're hearing from people who are proposing to be leaders of this country. And then they start arguing among themselves. Do we do bombing on the level of Vietnam, or should we do bombing on the level of Iraq, which exceeded the bombing in Vietnam? Who should we take out? And they have a public discussion about this. But they're discussing democracy and making America great again. So it was interesting watching Wolf Blitzer be the choreographer of this death fest posing as a so-called debate, when in fact it was him as a kind of conductor for a macabre public demonstration of really what ails America, the mindset that America has, the notion that you can and must rule the world and all life within it. And the United States, the country, in the name of 300 million people, these folks who clearly, in one way or the other, have some psychological damage to them, otherwise they couldn't possibly be so desensitized, they have no problem embracing that philosophy and, in fact, seeing nothing wrong with it. And this is what the media and the political world both agree on. This is what makes America great. We could bomb most of the world to smithereens, and we must have our way. There you go. And that is a debate. And in this debate, I mean, the undercard, as they call it, because this was a show, the undercard with the first four mirrored the main event, as they called it, of the additional nine. They all agreed. There wasn't really anybody there who said, except for Rand Paul, who put up something of a, you know, kind of timid political resistance there, saying, don't be so hurried to go to war. But for him, as the exception, we had an overwhelming opposition by the rest. They all agreed. It's time for the United States to have a really good war. And if you thought that feminism had any kind of a softening edge, I refer you to Carly Fiorina, who was more hawkish than you could even imagine. She was out hawking the hawks. She says, we must have this and we must have that. We must have boots on the ground. Well, yeah, put your own boots. How about that? Your own designer boots. Get them and you go put them on the ground. Send your sons and daughters first. And you go. Donald Trump, who went to West Point, and he would always tell you that. He went to military school, earning a medal for being tidy. You know he has no interest in reporting to anybody's battlefront, nor having his sons, who are to be the next generation's captains of industry and the new oligarchs that he has bred, to go to war. They're not fighting for anything. They're in the habit of paying for what they need, if they have to. So that's what we saw last night, masquerading as a debate, and then having achieved what they set out to do, which is to make the case for the national support for the unsupportable, which is, let's just go to war. After all, we are being attacked by terrorists. Wow. What a thing. And the media are so compliant, they're not yet questioning anything. Was this terrorism in San Bernardino? And isn't it interesting? Isn't it odd? Just ask yourself some basic questions. Isn't it odd that everything in this season now is all about terrorism? Because it capitalizes on fear. And it makes people subject to manipulation. and they will set aside reason and logic for safety. Because if you could make people afraid, really, really afraid, and for the wrong reasons, but for the right objectives from where you stand, then you would have done the good job. You would have done the excellent job of control. Total control. So I watched this, and here's what was so odd. I watched this with two little boys who happened to be my grandnephews. One is just 9 years old. And he says, "Is this real?" I said, "What do you mean by that?" He says, is this whole thing real?" And I thought it was a profound question. I said, "What do you mean? Is it real? You're seeing it. It's happening." I said, "But why would you ask me, is it real?" Now he's nine. And no coaching. He says, "They sound silly." I said, well, I've done a good job. I have telepathically communicated with this little boy, and he's picked up my signals perfectly. They do sound silly. And I said, "But why would you say they sound silly?" He says, "Because they're not making sense." And so far, we were batting 3 for 3. He said 3 things, and they were spectacularly insightful. And he's 9 years old. Imagine what would happen if everybody came to such conclusions instantly. He's watching the same. We had no previous conversation about this. He just says, "What are you watching?" I said, "Well, I'm watching this debate." They called it a debate, but I'm watching it. And he sat quite a bit. He sat through the first round and some of the second. And then he asked me these questions. "Is this real? They look silly. They sound silly." And that is what I'm hoping America wakes up to, the fact that these people sound silly. Of course, they have an objective. They are very, very narrow. This is, in fact, narrow casting. This is the way that people have decided who their targets for manipulation would be and direct the narrative at them so as to control not only their minds, but to control their actions, informed by their controlled minds. How could we possibly think that all of these things are happening just sporadically, disconnected and unconnected from one another? How could we think that there's no possible link between and among these events? How could we possibly believe everything that has been said is absolutely 100% true? And yet every story I've read so far quotes mostly, if not only, governmental sources. And these are media people, some of them from well-established media organizations like the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Chicago Tribune. And now they are full on part and party to it. Full blast. So that CNN can decide that journalism now is about volunteering its services and its people, its so-called experts, volunteering them to be part of the whole issue, not of inspecting the veracity of the government, not independently pursuing the truth, but simply to be stenographers and tape recorders. Just as they get it, they share it. And this becomes news, putting on the line their own so-called reputations for solid journalism. And calculating that we will go along for the ride because the people who are in the crosshairs, whether as key actors here or whether as members of a particular group, are all really detestable to the powers that be. And in some cases, they come from, in most cases, from politically unprotected communities. Now, somewhere in the back of our minds, we might recall, even if you're vaguely familiar with history, instances all around the world, and here, too, in America, where this kind of nationalistic fervor served a very ugly purpose that was carried out by the government to wipe people out. This kind of nationalistic fervor was built up in Germany. It worked so well against the Roma people, also called gypsies. They wiped them out by the millions first, and then went to the Jews. Because it was about who was a true German. We have the same, ironically, we have the same thing going on in Israel today. Who is a real Jew? Who is the authentic Jew? Who is a true Israeli? The Palestinians, well, they don't matter. They have to get to be real Jews and real Israelis. In South Africa, people slaughtered, not just in recent years under apartheid, but in colonial times, millions wiped out. Not a cry. Not a cry. These are not real people. And the Boers who were there for one purpose and one purpose only, which was to just take the land, still dominate, despite the fact that independence has been gained. This is a story that is worldwide. It's ugly. But it could not have been done without the cooperation of the media to provide a false narrative and to reinforce it with their so-called news coverage, continuing news coverage. We're seeing the same pattern being repeated here in the United States today. I go back to the 50s, when black people were dying in the South, being lynched. It was papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post and other major publications and television stations ignoring it, deliberately ignoring it, printing stories fed to them by the FBI, by COINTELPRO. You may recall a piece done by Dan Rather, The Hate That Hate Produced, about Malcolm X. Yes? I mean, Mike Wallace, sorry. Not Dan Rather, Mike Wallace. The Hate That Hate Produced. Not that Malcolm X was actually presenting a definitive analysis of contemporary oppression in the United States, but that it was also an expression of what was going on in the diaspora, in the African diaspora, to African people all over the world. Not until he got coverage outside of the United States, not until people began to see for themselves what was going on, what the truth was, through independent coverage. Not until then did the tide begin to turn just a little bit. And television captured the dogs and the water cannons and the batons and the sticks and the bullets and the deformed, battered bodies in shallow, muddy graves. Not until then did it begin to suggest to people that they ought to have a different mindset, that all that was being said wasn't necessarily true. The media played a major role in this alternate reality, creating an alternate reality, either by commission, that is, taking orders from the government, the various intelligence agencies dedicated to assassinating black leaders, dedicated to fracturing leadership, dedicated to thwarting leadership as it is today. That same government is talking about trust. I discussed just this past week Loretta Lynch having a news conference telling America, as the nation's top prosecutor, there will be no prosecution. This office is not going to look toward prosecuting anybody in the police killings in Chicago, specifically that of Laquan McDonald. She said so. And what did all the stories say? All of them reported the U.S. Attorney General has launched a probe, a civil rights probe, with the intention of reform of Chicago police, of the Chicago Police Department. That's the story. The woman called a news conference. I thought I was hallucinating, and I wonder, am I the only person in the country who found that the news story here is that the nation's top prosecutor absolutely said there will be no investigation, no prosecution of any police officer in this case. And yet they report that she has launched a civil rights probe because she said so. They faithfully parroted everything she said. She started the news conference by saying, this conference today, I'm announcing that I will be launching a probe into the Chicago Police Department. She went on and on. And then she made it clear the probe has nothing to do with prosecuting any person. And what did we get? Nobody said, well, wait a minute. Nobody even bothered to ask the question. Did you just say that? Did we just hear you say you're not prosecuting anybody? And you are the nation's top prosecutor, and you are telling us that the aim and objective of your involvement in this case is to basically help reform the administrative processes of the Chicago Police Department. Your predecessor, who also happened to be African American, did exactly the same thing in Ferguson, Missouri. He said, he put a report out, there will be no federal prosecution here. But as I leave you with a report. How about that? Alternate realities. So when you see these things happening, and they're now happening in your face, there has been a redefinition of whiteness because it is a practical thing to do. Not too long ago, not even Donald Trump could be claiming to be white. He's of German extraction. He's just not white enough. In America, not too long ago, Germans were not white. The Irish were not white. Italians absolutely were not white. Jews were not white. In fact, a major topic of discussion in Israel and in the United States, although it's not widely reported, is that there's a discussion going on about whiteness. Are Jews white? Should they be white? Should they want to be white? Big story, big intellectual discussions going on in the Jewish community about whiteness. But for purposes of fighting with the other, the people who have yearned for whiteness, yearned for total acceptance for, as whites, they have an in. So that's why we have in this discussion, we have the leading people are Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and the son of a German immigrant, Donald Trump, leading the charge. None of them would have been considered white at all. You should read a book I recommend, When the Irish Became White, by Noel Ignatieff. It's one of the best books you could find on the subject. Or White by Law, by Ian Haney Lopez, talking about the incredible schizophrenia of America around this notion of race. But in these times, as the population of the United States is changing, and it is inevitable that it would change by 2032, if not sooner, to a majority non-white nation, this opportunity of terrorism, i.e., as they're now calling it, insisting on that it be called radical Islamic terrorism, the demonization of people of Arab descent, people of color, affords a great opportunity to indirectly settle the score, to indirectly realign this axis of whiteness. So Rubio and Cruz and Trump, you know, great grandson of Friedrich Drumpf, who changed his name to Fred Trump. We talked about that here. These people have now stepped forward as white Americans. They identify. Well, Carson also is embracing whiteness. You see what I mean? You see how complicated it is, how complex it is. This, you think you're watching a debate. You're watching people going through a strange kind of deracination in order to realign themselves against the definition of who is to enjoy power and who is not, who belongs in circles of power and who does not. That's what I'm talking about. So you watch these things and you see you're not really watching a, quote, debate. They haven't yet risen. There's no intellectual depth there to rise to the level of a good, solid debate. So it's a show and tell. It's a Q&A. That's as far as they could go. But what is happening And what everybody has a vested interest in communicating, whether by a slogan like Donald Trump, or whether with the identification of whiteness and affinity toward it, or whether in terms of the media signing on to the expressed purpose of mass control, all of it having to do with maintaining white supremacist power in this country. All these things are wrapped up in what you think you saw last night as a debate. It's not a debate. I certainly have nothing to debate around this whole thing. I'm quite clear about what it was I was looking at. And this little kid says, they're silly. They're not making sense. They're not making sense to a little boy who can spot it. Well, what about you? Have you spotted it? And if you have, what are you going to do? What are you prepared to do? They're telling us not only of their intention, but they're telling us of what informs it. They're playing for keeps here because the stakes are so high, not only for them individually, but for this unique social order that we have in the United States, fueled by this false notion of white supremacy. But white supremacy is fighting for its life. And they have the systems that they will reorganize and reshuffle in order to achieve the larger goal, which is domination and control forever. That is what fuels the fear. That is what therefore fuels this backlash, this intentional mission to make sure that the system that they have, it has kind of been rattled a bit, to restore order to their system. Now, if you want to dance through the fields and think it's a nice spring day, and that's how it's going to be every day, good for you. But at some point, you ought to appreciate what reality is. And at some point, you ought to appreciate the fact that in so many ways, we're getting cues as to where things are headed. It is not accidental that I was able to tell you exactly where things are going to go. It's not accidental at all. It's just based on studying patterns of practice. I thank you for joining me today and allowing me to stretch out a little bit on the subject. And it's, of course, it's a very different way of discussing the debate. You're not going to hear it anyplace else. It is, however, a necessary exercise, I think, in deconstructing the reality that we are smack in the middle of. And yet we're being told, that's not it. It's something else. It's a debate. Yeah, well, you go right ahead and believe that, and you do so at your own peril. Wise up. The game is on, and they're not playing. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of this program, and we will see each other tomorrow. Always a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.